Purport. The great politician, Chanaka Pandit, said, Mata yasya grihe nasti, bharya chapriya badini, aranyam tena gantavyam, yataranyam tata griham. If a person has neither a mother nor a pleasing wife at home, he should leave home and go to the forest, because for him, there is no difference between the forest and home. The real mata, or mother, is devotional service to the Lord. And the real patni, or devoted wife, is a wife who helps her husband execute religious principles in devotional service. These two things are required for a happy home. Actually, a woman is supposed to be the energy of the man. Historically, in the background of every great man, there is either a mother or a wife. One's household life is very successful if he has both a good wife and mother. In such a case, everything about household affairs and all the paraphernalia in the house becomes very pleasing. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had both a good mother and a pleasing wife, and he was very happy at home. Nonetheless, for the benefit of the whole human race, he took sannyas and left both his mother and wife. In other words, it is essential that one have both a good mother and wife in order to become perfectly happy at home. Otherwise, home life has no meaning. Unless one is religiously guided by intelligence and renders devotional service under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his home can never become very pleasing to a saintly person. In other words, if a man has a good mother or a good wife, there is no need of taking sannyas. That is, unless it is absolutely necessary, as it was for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Om Ajnana Timrandasya Ginan Ginan Chalakaya Chakshu Unmilitangena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I think we should contextualize a little bit about Srila Prabhupada and his purports and how the books were produced in the days when we were all waiting for them every 2 or 3 months. Srila Prabhupada was giving us, young devotees, relevant instructions for our lives in his purports, and at the same time providing instruction for the entire world for all time. Such is the great power of a Mahabhagavat like Srila Prabhupada. At first glance, this purport here in the story of King Paranjana appears to be a rather simple description or a simple prescription on how to be happy as a householder in the home. And it's also interesting that this purport comes in a series of purports in which Srila Prabhupada is taking essentially a description of a negative experience and turning it into a positive description of pure devotional service and how we can become pure devotees. King Paranjana is acting in ways which have taken him off the path of not only spiritual life, but even dharmic life. He's become influenced by the mode of ignorance. He's become sinful. He's become attached to the object of the senses. His life is not auspicious. And, of course, this is a very important allegory because King Prachinabarhi is hearing this allegory from Narada Muni in order to understand that he is in this position of an unfortunate materialist without vision. And one could, the commentary could, be focused on this aspect of the story, which is that one, if one takes a certain path in life, one will become very unfortunate. And we see that in this world today, where everyone, in general, and it's even affecting India, is affected by the modes of passion and ignorance, trying to enjoy more and more of the senses, with less and less connection to those activities which give us connection to our spiritual selves, to our real self, as servants of God. Not even just connections to ourselves as servants of God, but even as healthy, well-integrated human beings living in a planet which can sustain the life on it. Right now, the whole world is on an unsustainable course. More and more and more sense gratification, consuming oil, consuming this, consuming that, and where does it all end? Like a drug addict, one is addicted to these things. Prabhupada could have warned against that, and he does warn against that, and it's in his purports. But instead, he wants us to understand how we should live our lives in a way in which we become Krishna conscious, no matter what's going on outside. Actually, this is a lesson that he learned early on when he met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his Gurudev. Srila Prabhupada was a young man. He wasn't very much interested in so many of these gurus because he had seen so many gurus come to his home as a child, and these spiritual masters, they were not always on the highest level. They may have been Vaishnavas, they may have had some spiritual inclination, but Prabhupada was not impressed. So when he was coaxed by a friend to meet Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada, and they met on the roof at Ultadunga Road in 1922, immediately Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada told our Prabhupada, "You should preach in the West, in English." And Prabhupada's first response was, "Oh, we have to become free from British rule before anyone will listen to us." Prabhupada was at the time a nationalist. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada, he smashed that idea. He said, "No, Krishna consciousness is so important, it doesn't matter what the outside circumstances are. It doesn't matter what the national politics are. It doesn't matter what's going on in the material world. One has to become Krishna conscious and make others Krishna conscious." And that was Prabhupada's mood, to make us Krishna conscious. He is our Adhikar. Most of us came to the movement without any good qualities. We were coming because we were fried, burned out, disturbed, and we wanted to find some kind of way to become peaceful or happy. And Prabhupada tricked us. He gave us more than shanti. He's giving us, ultimately, prema. But he was working from a very, very early position here. So he wrote these purports in order to reach a broad mass of people and teach people in the West, young people in the West, what real dharmic life is in the context of Krishna consciousness. And in this way, help us be able to know what the standard is. And of course, because Prabhupada was very enthusiastic about speaking the truth and telling his audience exactly what the Vedic understanding is in as nice a way as possible. But he wasn't going to compromise with any sort of a philosophical or social ideas. In other words, Prabhupada was coming from a place in which he knew that according to the standards of long time past ages of Vedic teachings, that there were certain things in the West that didn't actually jive with what he was going to say. But he was going to say them anyway, in a way in which he hoped that that could be understood, and in a way in which that would establish a standard by which we could go forward. At the same time, he also broke the mold with the Babaji's and the sadhus in India. So he had trouble on both ends in some ways. He had his God brothers who would criticize, oh, you've initiated women. You have a Brahmacharini ashram. We hear Hare Krishna. We hear that that boys and girls are mixing in the ashram, etc., so many things like this. And so they were criticizing. And on the other hand, he would have persons like, he was attracting so many people in the early days, like Allen Ginsberg. Allen Ginsberg was a famous poet in the 1960s in America, and but not a very reputable moral value. He lived a lifestyle and a way of did things that Prabhupada did not approve of. But Prabhupada, nevertheless, would be appear on stage with Allen Ginsberg, would allow him to chant with him in the beginning, because Ginsberg was so important that he would draw in people to hear from Prabhupada. But later on, Ginsberg would be critical. He never was super critical of Prabhupada. He would say, Swamiji is very conservative. He's very conservative. He doesn't bend the rules like so many other swamis. So make it a little easier. Tone it down a little bit to make the teachings a little more accessible. He's very conservative. And then later on, I remember reading in the early 80s, it was Satsarupa Maharaj and some of his poetry books. Wrote a poem, I can't remember the name now, but there was a line of, some people will say that you are conservative, but my guru, Dave, Srila Prabhupada, he's not conservative. He's actually the most liberal. He's the most liberal because he's able to take in someone like Allen Ginsberg and give him mercy and not break his principles. He's able to do both. This is a sign of a great personality. Yes, yes, chant, Mr. Ginsberg, chant, chant, chant. Oh, yes, your lifestyle is not something I approve of. And he would laugh about it. And in other words, sometimes Prabhupada would be interviewed. There's one famous interview where a young woman asked one of these dumb questions. Why do you shave your head? And then Prabhupada's response was, why do you have bare legs? And she was taken back. And Prabhupada said, better a cool head and warm legs. Because Prabhupada's whole mood was, I'm going to make sure you know what the standard is, but I want you to know what the standard is in a way in which I'm not... in a hurtful sort of way or in a proud sort of way. He's a pure devotee. As a pure devotee, he's giving us a chance to see what we should understand, what we should know as the standard. Because if one doesn't know what the standard is, then, well, look what we have here today. Everything we have today in our movement is an outgrowth of Prabhupada's painstakingly mapping out the movement from the very beginning. From how the temples would be funded, to how the books would be produced, to how the philosophy would be preached, he knew. He could have changed things in some way. He could have made some compromises. But he wouldn't have been able to have we wouldn't have this influential movement today, which is able to give real Krishna consciousness, without Prabhupada making sure that everything was in a certain framework from the very beginning. Prabhupada knew this, and therefore he was very careful to make sure that he spoke what he exactly thought should be the truth. So here in this purport, he's actually saying lots of things. It's very interesting because when Prabhupada writes a purport, we have to understand it's 1 o'clock in the morning, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and he's quietly sitting here with his books, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the Goswami's literature, and he's bathed, he's chanted, and he's sitting in very, we're all asleep, and he's getting dictation from the Goswamis. He's hearing Rupa Goswami. He's hearing Krishna. He's funneling all this to us. You know, Vedic literature is vast. And then from Vedic literature, if we had to read all the Vedas or all the, we would get so confused by so many non-important topics, about fire sacrifices and this sorts of jagna and that sort of rules and regulations. So that Vedic literature is distilled into the Vaishnava literature. And the Vaishnava literature, Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and these literatures, is then funneled in and distilled even more by the Goswamis. But Prabhupada takes the Goswamis literature and all the literature coming down our line and gives us one-page nectar purports in which so much is said. Just in this purport. Of course, on the surface, what this purport is saying, and it's very important, it's talking about what makes a household a household. And actually today, modern psychologists are beginning to understand this. How important it is that a home have a wife or a mom, a mother. Because children need mother. A stable home provides a stable environment for society to build upon healthy relationships. I mean, now they're beginning, after so many years of people, women having to be more in the workforce and daycare centers and so many things in the West where kids don't get real loving care, where the home is fractured. They're seeing so much social disturbance. So now there's a new and energized and re-understood idea of the importance of the woman's role in the home. This is right here in the Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada is emphasizing this, that actually the woman is supposed to be the energy of the man. Historically, in the background of every man, there is either a good wife, or there is either a mother or a wife. One's household life is very successful if one has both a good wife and a mother. In the 1970s, in the United States, in the West, there was a whole idea of women's liberation. And liberation is an important thing, but what liberation is not to be able to work just like a man. It's not to be able to copy, to become just like a man. And Prabhupada made this point that women were being fooled by men who were pushing the women's liberation movement so that they could have the women work just as hard as them and then take advantage of them in the sense that they'll still do all the stuff at home and they'll work just as hard as us and we'll tell them they're liberated. And Prabhupada would say, and it's very interesting because Prabhupada, what he's saying is that women and men are different, that women have a different psychology than men. And men have a certain way of looking at life, and women have a certain way of looking at life. And if you take away the feminine on the basis of saying it has no value, everybody should become a man, that's not liberation. That's conquering in the name of liberation. It's men conquering women in a different way. Men so long had taken advantage of women, they found a new way to take advantage. So Prabhupada's saying, understand the psychology. Understand the psychology of that men and women play different roles. And by these different roles, if they play them well, then the home life is perfect. If the home life is perfect, then one's spiritual life will be perfect. And from there, of course, the children will be happy, the society will be happy, because if the spiritual life is taken care of in the context of this society, in a Vedic varnashram sense, then from top to bottom, we have healthy individuals. Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to state this way. He talked about Krishna consciousness is not just get your spiritual life together. I chant Hare Krishna Prabhu, but I'm an emotional wreck. Or I'm full of anxieties. Just chant Hare Krishna, it'll go away. Well, just chanting Hare Krishna will work, yes, for everybody. But there is a whole system of Vedic psychology and a Vedic way of life, which we may not be able to follow completely, let's be realistic. But at least we can bring in certain aspects of this. What are those aspects? It was actually spoken of yesterday. Our homes can be perfect if we can chant Hare Krishna there, offer our food there, read the Bhagavatam, and have deities. We make our homes ashrams. They're places of peace and places where we can focus on Krishna. So here Prabhupada, he's speaking, you know, about what makes a home a good place. Home is a good place when one has a wife and a mother there, when a man has a wife and mother there. And conversely, when the woman has a husband there, so that they balance out and they create a whole unit that works for the benefit of each other. But earlier in the purport, there's one phrase here, which is very interesting. I'll probably put it here, because it can be taken at two different levels. The real mata, or mother, is devotional service to the Lord. The real mother, our real mother, is devotional service to the Lord. Now, Prabhupada's writing this in the context of the home. So we can talk about the wife and the mother helping us become more devotional, helping us be more stable. But if we take it out of context a little bit and just hear this term, bhakti. Bhakti is our real mother. Bhakti Devi. Bhakti is given to us by our guru, by our spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada plants the bhajana kriya in the heart of his disciple. Prabhupada's disciples, who are now giving initiation, are planting that bhakti lata in all the hearts of their disciples. So that we should understand that devotional service to the Lord is our real mother. And that bhakti, oh bhakti Devi, bhakti Devi is being given to us by the guru. And so the guru in the purport here, Srila Prabhupada, is giving out bhakti. We read the Bhagavatam from Prabhupada. We read these because we couldn't understand the Bhagavatam. You can't understand the Bhagavatam without the help of the pure devotee. We read the Bhagavatam on our own. You go to some college, Bhagavat Purana, translated by Professor So-and-so. It'll be a very thin volume. Won't have any purports. And you read it, and people say, oh, it's a poetry. It's got some stories. It's some Hindu mythology. But they don't understand what it means, because without the intervention of the pure devotee, of that devotee who gives us the real understanding, we can't understand it. So here Prabhupada is telling us that Bhakti Devi, this is our real mother. So in any event, whatever we do, it doesn't matter what, and this isn't just for householders, this is for brahmacharis, it's for sannyasis, for vanapras, for all of us. We need to live in an environment in which bhakti is fostered, in which our mother gives us shelter. And therefore, we have to find that way of living, which is going to be conducive to spiritual life. And it's, therefore, it's different for everyone. You know, I'm a householder. I can say, oh, you know, this is a certain way to live, and this is how I live, and this is what I do. And a brahmachari will say, well, it's not for me. And it isn't. A brahmachari has a different set of needs and ways of living from a householder. But the principle's the same. We all have to come to the platform where we're following Rupa Goswami's teaching of yukta vairagya, of actively becoming renounced in the service of Krishna. We're using everything in the service of Krishna. The householder has a certain set of rules and regulations and activities that are different from a brahmachari's. And a brahmachari has a different way of living than a householder. Both the householder and the brahmachari can practice yukta vairagya. Both the householder and the brahmachari and the sannyasi can be detached and can be renounced. And they also can also be sense gratifiers. Because if we don't act according to the way our ashram is set up, then we become diverted. One of my godbrothers, he's now a guru, Virinda Sarupa, said many years ago, he was talking about the problem he had in his temple with brahmacharis who were more bachelors than brahmacharis. And one brahmachari said to him, well, at least I'm not a householder. I'm not acting like this. And of course, Virinda Sarupa's a householder. He said, Prabhu, the householder is acting under the pressure of maintaining a family, raising his kids, acting in ways to make a living, and therefore he has no time for Maya. He's under the thumb of a certain dharma, so that he stays fit. If he's doing that, he's properly situated. You're supposed to be under the control of your spiritual master, so that every moment of the day that you're doing something under some kind of obligation and pressure. You, Prabhu, are neither acting like a householder under the pressure of some kind of making money to maintain a family, or under your spiritual master. Therefore, you're getting neither benefit. So you must act in a way in which your life is going to be focused on making progress in spiritual life, either through a certain dharmic, we might say, somewhat materialistic way as a householder, or a more renounced sort of way as a brahmachari. And if you can't be a very renounced brahmachari, then become a fixed-up householder. One has to find that. And there's examples within our own movement. Just take, for example, our three of our acharyas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur never took sannyas. He stayed in household life right up towards the very end. And when he left and went into his bhajan kutir, at the very end of his life, he's in his 70s already. His home, he'd already offered to Krishna in his bhajans. I offer my whole home to you. My wife, my family. He was already living in Krishna Loka, in his own home. Therefore, that example is there that one can stay in household life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur did. But his son was the most renounced, Naishthika Brahmachari. His whole life he was a Brahmachari. And of course we know so many of the stories, how he renounced eating mangoes at the age of 3 or 4 because he had eaten one by mistake. I mean, here was super renounced. Who can do that? Who can do that? Maybe somebody can. That may be one's model. If you want, you can follow. And then there's our own Srila Prabhupada, who gives the example of dutifully following his household life and never forgetting Krishna, doing what he needed to do to raise his family, to take care of all the things necessary, but also serving the Gaudiya Math, associating with the sannyasis, getting instructions from his spiritual master. Just 3 weeks before his spiritual master left, he got the instruction, make sure you go to the West, starting to write his books and publishing Back to Godhead magazine, even in the 1940s. And when he gets an opportunity, because his family's not supportive, he says he renounces, takes vanaprastha and ultimately sannyas. And he speaks about the fact that he wasn't so eager to take sannyas, because that wasn't what he wanted to do, but he did and he took it, and look the result. So we can see there's different models for us to follow. But each of these models is giving us the opportunity to step by step become more and more Krishna conscious. Prabhupada says at the end of this purport, unless one is religiously guided by intelligence and renders devotional service under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his home can never become very pleasing to a saintly person. So what is this saying here? Unless we're guided by our intelligence, which is being informed by our Guru Maharaj, by our practice of Krishna consciousness, which means we're chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We have good sadhana. We're chanting every day. We're hearing from Bhagavatam. That's our good intelligence. Unless we are religiously guided by our intelligence and rendering devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, wherever we're situated won't be an appropriate place for a saintly person. In other words, we want to be able to invite the saintly persons into our lives. If we're a householder, we want a home that, yes, Guru Maharaj, come to my home. I want to feed you. I want to give you, bathe your feet and hear from you. If we're a brahmachari, we want to be able to be with our Guru Maharaj and say, Maharaj, please let me serve you. How can I serve you? In whatever way I can. And when Maharaj sees us, he knows, here is a person who's endeavoring in Krishna consciousness. So this is our goal. We want to make progress like this. And Srila Prabhupada, in his whole presentation of Krishna consciousness, has made it easy for us, because he set up a whole process by which, by chanting Hare Krishna, offering our prasad, reading the Bhagavatam, and engaging in deity worship, all day is filled. It's become sacred. Our lives become sacred. Srila Prabhupada's so merciful. In the very beginning, 1974, when this is written, he knows that somehow or other, you know, in 2012, in 2027, in 2057, these books are going to be read, and they're going to be spoken about. And not only that, his disciples, his grand disciples, and bigger family after that will be writing things also. So many books now that Prabhupada's disciples have translated or written from books like Radhanath Swami's written about his experience of coming to the movement, or other translations of wonderful Goswami literature. But we would have none of it if it wasn't for these purports. We would have none of it had it not been for Prabhupada sweating, blood, sweat, and tears to set up this movement. So before I finish, I want to read just one verse and one paragraph so that we'll let Prabhupada summarize everything we've just said here, because this I found to be a wonderful summation of this verse and of what we've discussed. This is from the 7th chapter, 7th canto, 14th chapter, verse 3 and 4, and one paragraph of the purport. The translation is, Agrihasta, and you can put in brahmachari or sunya, and Agrihasta must associate again and again with saintly persons, and with great respect he must hear the nectar of the activities of the Supreme Lord and his incarnations, as these activities are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas. One should gradually become detached from affection for his wife and children, exactly like a man awakening from a dream. And that affection goes to computers, to internet, to a lifestyle of a certain way of living, to attachments to all sorts of whatever you find your in the Christian metaphor is the sacred cow, that idol, that's something that you are attached to that's not God. And, the sacred cow. There was a story in the Bible where at one point, instead of worshiping God, the children of Israel, they took all the gold that was actually the Ark of the Covenant, which was their deity, which was the book, and they melted it down. They made a sacred cow and they worshiped that. And then when Moses came back, he said, "What are you doing? This isn't God." So what are those attachments? It's those attachments. So, Prabhupada's purport. It's a one paragraph. This is only one paragraph of the purport. The Krishna consciousness movement has been established to give grihasthas and everyone else all over the world an opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita specifically. The process, as described in many ways, is one of hearing and chanting Srinvata Swakata Krishna Punyasravana Kirtanam. Everyone, especially grihasthas, who are mudadi, ignorant about the goal of life, should be given opportunities to hear about Krishna. Simply by hearing, by attending lectures in different centers of the Krishna consciousness movement, where topics of Krishna from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are discussed, they will be purified of their sinful inclination for constant indulgence in illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, which have all become prominent in modern days. Thus, they can be raised to the status of light. Punya Shravana Kirtanam. Simply by joining the kirtan, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And by hearing about Krishna from Bhagavad Gita, one must be purified, especially if he also takes prasad. This is all going on in the Krishna consciousness movement. This is Prabhupada's Krishna consciousness movement. This is the movement that we need to give it to everyone in the form of association, books, programs in the home, inviting people to our temples, kirtan on the street, ways to get people to say, "I just saw a Hare Krishna devotee, Hare Krishna, or I just got a book." This is Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. I guess, are there any questions or comments? A little early. Mrs. Mataji over there. Right over there.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. A couple are religiously married, and then we always hear that they should not have attachment to the wife and children. Can you explain this more in detail?
This has always been misunderstood. This has been misunderstood. In the beginning of our movement, it was almost like, "Oh, I'm married, but I should have no feelings for my family. That's attachment. I can't do that. I should have no feelings for my children." And sometimes young men would ask Prabhupada for sannyas prematurely, and Prabhupada discouraged this, because this is not something that one should be doing, because I just find being a householder inconvenient. And I don't want to be attached. So I think if we look at the lives of previous acharyas, especially someone like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you see a person who's perfectly balanced. That attachment to the household and the attachment to the family members and to children and to wife is all put in perspective. That imagine we're in Krishna Loka, in Goloka Vrindavan. You don't think the Nanda Baba and Yasodamayi are attached to each other? Of course they're attached to each other. They're attached to each other in service of Krishna. They love each other in service of Krishna. So that if we take that as an example, we know that as devotees, we want to be servants of Krishna. And our wife and children, or our husband and children, or our brothers and sisters, or our, whatever our family members, these are our relatives or family members who are gathered around us by one circumstance or another, because they're all devotees. And as devotees, we love these devotees, and we want to help them become Krishna conscious. And we want to serve Krishna with them as devotees of Krishna. And we want to love Krishna together, so that loving one's wife and loving one's children, loving one's husband, is a natural outgrowth of our love for Krishna. In fact, how could one have a Mayavad type detachment from one's family and call oneself a devotee? Devotees have to know how to love one another. We're not going to, if you want a process where you don't have to love anybody, become a jnani and go to a cave and sit there, or a mystic yogi, and sit there in mystic meditation for a long period of time, and don't talk to anybody. You won't have to. You don't have to love anybody. But bhakti means we love those around us. We love Krishna and Krishna's devotees. And if we have a wife or a husband with whom we share our life with whom we are sharing everything with for many, many years, how much we should be loving that person. So much so that we were praying to Krishna, please help my husband or wife be delivered. Please give my husband or wife Krishna consciousness. And in this way, we're caring for them. Now, we're not attached like Paranjana is attached. I'm attached to my wife because she gives me sex. I'm attached to my wife because she cooks for me. I want her to do this for me. She's my servant. That's what she's there for. My husband, I like him because he makes a lot of money. If he didn't make money, I'd get rid of him. That's material attachment. That we have to go. Or the attachment of, I love my children because when they grow up, they'll be rich and famous and they'll make some money so I don't have to worry about retirement. I love my children so I can brag about them. These are the material attachments. Or I love my home because I surround myself with all sorts of comforts, and these comforts help me forget God, forget my relationship with Krishna. That sort of attachment we want to learn to be detached from. But we want to be attached to the devotees of the Lord in our family. And we want our family to go back to Godhead. Just read the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and we can see how we should become attached to our family in the service of Krishna. Okay, thank you. Okay, Krishna. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah.
It's curious to notice that mostly when feminism is advertised, it's the ladies who do that, right?
Yes.
Why is that? If it's a lot by men.
Well, Prabhupada, I think, was being provocative when he said it was a plot by men. Certainly women have been put in positions, especially in certain cultures, where they're put in great disadvantage by unqualified men who think that they can just simply lord it over them because they're men. And therefore, the women want to be liberated from this sort of cultural oppression. But if you don't know what liberation is, if you think liberation is to simply become more able to make a living, and it may be important to do that. I mean, that's a relative thing. But if you think that's all it is to become, I can now become a doctor or a lawyer, that's good. You should be able to do that. But if that's all there is, then it plays into the hands of the materialists who think that's all there is in life anyway. Let's all just become worker bees to the end of life, and then we'll just, you know, work, 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 retire, and then drop dead. There's nothing else. And that sort of, quote, liberation is not liberation. That's just another form of bondage. Now, Prabhupada was very provocative when he said, well, men are behind all this. Of course, many men don't like the idea at all anyway because they want to keep their position. But what Prabhupada was noticing is that women were just being given the right to become full of anxiety and work hard like the men. And then men would understand that and say, gee, she'll clean the house, take care of the kids, and work too? Great, I like that idea. And I'll take advantage of it, which is not liberation. That's just another form of bondage. So there, Prabhupada would ultimately say, it's when we stop identifying with it. I may be a man, I may be a woman, I may be a Russian, I may be an American, but whatever I am, I'm ultimately a servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. And therefore, I have to develop my identification as a pure servant of God, as a servant of Prabhupada. And then, I'm really liberated. And then, I'm not a man or a woman, but I'm a devotee of God. And these other concerns are less important. Yes.
I just wanted to comment. I really liked how you mentioned before in your lecture about the just chant Hare Krishna Prabhu, because so many times in my experiences and other devotees I've talked to, we get this type of blanket statement that devotees make about their problems. Like instead of looking at your anarthas and trying to grow, they say, oh, just chant Hare Krishna Prabhu, everything will be okay. Like everything will just be fixed. And I was just curious, did Prabhupada ever have this type of attitude or mood? Like just chant Hare Krishna and don't look at your anarthas? Or
Prabhupada would say just chant Hare Krishna. I think that's where he got it from. But Prabhupada also would be very careful to try to help a devotee find the proper situation. Oh, chant Hare Krishna, but if you need to be a pujari, be a pujari. Chant Hare Krishna, if you're not happy as a brahmachari, you should become a grihastha. Even to the point where in the 70s, there were big problems with sannyasis. They became sannyasis, some of these men, out of really bad reasons. And there was one sannyasi, very important, big GBC, and he was having big problems, and Prabhupada accepted him back and said, just become a grihastha and keep chanting Hare Krishna, but get situated properly. So Prabhupada, of course, in the time he was preaching to younger devotees who in a less sophisticated society, so he wasn't getting into any sort of psychology like we are today. We use some self-help books, and some devotees have become psychologists and things like that. But he would never, I think if he was here today, he would never say, here's a devotee who's having some mental health issues, some kind of anxiety or some sort of some concerns, And you're just going to say, chant Hare Krishna as a blanket? No, I'll probably say, what are you going to do to help this person become better situated so they can chant Hare Krishna? Because again, if you're chanting Hare Krishna in anxiety and you can't possibly focus on the name, then that chanting Hare Krishna is not the same as chanting as Haridas Thakur chanting Hare Krishna or as Rupa Goswami chanting Hare Krishna. So I think that we need now to apply Prabhupada's teachings to the day, to our day and age, which is to say, just chant Hare Krishna, and what else do you need to be peaceful so you can make advancement in Krishna consciousness? But don't stop chanting Hare Krishna, ever. Haribol. Hare Krishna.